I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Jesse Brown joins me again. In about a month, the media critic and podcaster will mark the second anniversary of Canada Land, the website he's founded that's become a prominent critical eye on the media in Canada. When he was last on in December 2013, we talked about the need for media criticism in this country. And now, 2 years into the endeavor, let's check in again. A lot has happened in the last 2 years. The operation has become crowdfunded, and in the spirit of full disclosure, I am a monthly contributor, one of over 2,100 people donating just over $11,000 a month. It pays Mr. Brown's salary and those folks part of Canada Land, as well as the costs involved in keeping the website running. I'll get Mr. Brown to tell us about the folks with him, and the future of Canada Land and the three podcasts it hosts. Everyone knows Jesse for his work on the Gian Gomeshi matter, as well as exposing on Canada Land of CBC personalities taking speaking fees from organizations that had a connection, direct or otherwise, to stories covered or opined upon. There have been some missteps too, and I'll get Jesse to address criticism of him as well. The Twitter handle is at Jesse Brown. Visit CanadaLandShow.com and the Patreon site, patreon.com/CanadaLand, where you can set up a monthly contribution deal. Please welcome back to the Plante on the Line program in Toronto this day, Jesse Brown. Mr. Brown, good morning.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So I still haven't gotten my T-shirt, so who do I write about that?
Have you not gotten your T-shirt?
No, I haven't.
All right, I'm going to see to that, and I apologize. I think we've got the system all figured out, but there's maybe one or two people got skipped over, so it's on the way.
I didn't think about it until about a month ago when I was walking in East Van and I saw someone have it on, and I thought, wow, man, you know, it looks pretty good.
All right. I got the message. I don't want you to have T-shirt envy. It's in the mail, as they say.
So 2 years into this endeavor, 2 years into Canada Land, could you have imagined what it's become?
Not really. A kid can dream. But no, this has exceeded my expectations of what it could become and how quickly it could get to this point.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering, 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago, whenever you dreamt this up, what did you have in mind?
I mean, all I really wanted to do was find a way to do media analysis, media criticism, and I was really looking for any way to do that, hopefully as a professional journalist and to get paid for it, and sort of found a middle path in that when I couldn't get that done as a newspaper column or a magazine column or a TV show or a radio show or anything, you know, I talked to McLean's about a podcast, and I couldn't get a gig doing this, and so when I went off to do it independently, I had a little bit of sponsorship money from FreshBooks. So all I wanted was, you know, for that to lead to, you know, that, I think, rather fortunate initial sponsorship to actually lead to something sustainable so that I could do it. My hopes at the beginning were, like, maybe I'll have enough money coming in from this. Somebody will pay me something for it so I can do it a couple days a week. So for it to become not just my full-time job, but there are now three of us working full-time, three of us working part-time, a bunch of freelancers who contribute. There's the news stories on the website. There are three different podcasts we put out. We're working on new stuff. So, yeah, totally, you know, overwhelmed by the nerve that we struck and the support that we received.
Now, are people knocking at your door wanting to take it as part of whatever media outlet they belong to, say?
You're asking me, how's that happened?
Yeah.
Yes and no. I mean, I think that people are very aware that the independence of Canada Land and the fact that we don't have conflicts, and you know, we can report on the media because we are not, you know, we're in this very unique position of not being affiliated in any way with these massive corporations that seem to own just about everything in this country when it comes to media. That is part of who we are. So I think that people understand that, you know, you can't just come and try to swallow us up into an existing structure. That being said, we have had offers from both traditional publishers and media outlets to figure out partnerships, or somebody did just want to kind of gobble it up. That we did get an offer, you know, for something kind of like that, and yeah, we're not going to go that route. I think that would be a betrayal of what people fund us to do. I don't think that's what people want us to do, and you know, I know that story. I know how that goes a lot of the time, and I think we'd rather try something different.
Was and I don't know anything about this offer, but was the offer perhaps to kill what you've built because a lot of people find it uncomfortable, perhaps?
I don't think that's what was motivating this one offer. I think that this was a company that was looking to modernize and get into podcasting, and they saw, you know, why build our own when there's already somebody who's had some success with it. So I don't think that, and this wasn't one of the major players, major targets of our criticism. So I don't think it was an effort to co-opt us in that way.
So when you talk about having targets for your criticism, I'm sure you don't have an agenda. Well, maybe you do have an agenda, do you, in terms of how you want the media to change, perhaps?
Well, I mean, the agenda is to scrutinize the media, to hold it up to account. You know, everyone has an agenda, but that, I mean, you could also just call that a beat. I have my own biases, which I wear on my sleeve. You know, I think that I'm very skeptical of a lot of native content and advertorial and unmarked advertorial. I'm very, very skeptical of self-censorship that happens when certain moneyed interests exert too much power within a publication, you know, just because it's not called advertorial, but you know there's an advertiser who has an incredible amount of pull. I'm skeptical of some of the private interests, the families that own a lot of media, some of the one, you know, thing that comes up a lot is the conflicts of interest that happen within companies when a news organization is part of a corporate structure that has all sorts of other products and all sorts of, you know, be it internet access, you know, TV stations, and, you know, we've seen this play out. So, you know, certainly I guess I'm pro more voices. I think it'd be great if there are many, many more independent voices in this country, many more small to medium-sized media companies. I think we need more digital media. Like, I just don't even see the big players in the news business having cogent digital strategies that could even possibly work. So, yeah, I've got my, you know, like, I approach this as a critic as much as I approach it as a reporter. So as a critic, I opine freely, and those are some of my opinions on the subject.
And in terms of how the CBC, I mean, it's been a target of yours. I mean, it's something that you've looked at critically. Some of it, I'm sure, has to do with how they've handled things and how you've, say, not liked how they've handled things. I mean, would you have been satisfied had, say, Amanda Lang been fired for whatever it is that you were reporting on her? At the end of the day, was that the goal, perhaps, to have some of these people held to account, and if being held to account was them being removed from whatever job they had, that was fine with you?
No, the goal is to inform our audience about what we know happened there. We don't take any responsibility for outcomes, and we're not pushing to any particular outcome. I can tell you what my opinion is, that the CBC took a huge hit to their credibility for not firing her. And I can tell you my analysis of why they didn't. The reason why they didn't is because people have all kinds of theories about this, and, you know, is she in some certain class that Evan Sullivan isn't in? It's a much simpler answer than that, to my opinion, and that is that what Amanda Lang did, management knew all about it, and they signed off on it. So if she was to go down, she would take management with her, and they would have to be accountable for allowing her to interfere in her colleagues' stories, allowing her on the air, talking about a story she had such an obvious conflict of interest on. So, you know, these questions have answers, you know, to my satisfaction. Would I have been satisfied had she been fired? No, I don't really, you know, it's not my business, and I'm not collecting scalps.
And in terms of how they've handled Mansbridge and, say, Rex Murphy, because early on in Canada Land's life, those were prominent stories that you discussed. It, 2 years into this, I mean, are we where they're supposed to be, say?
Well, you know, it's a weird one. Whenever you ask a journalist about a story that they, you know, you don't want to take credit for when your stories actually influence positive change. Are you then blamed for instances where your stories don't instill positive change? I mean, you know, like I say, you can't take responsibility for outcomes. It's nice when that happens. It's nice that the CBC, kicking and screaming and denying that there was any kind of problem whatsoever, they then turn around and make all of this paid speaking verboten for all of their staff employees. That's how it should have been from the start, in my opinion. It's obvious that the coverage and the exposure is what inspired that. So, you know, that's Like, it's nice when shining a light on things acts as a disinfectant. But it's not my job to reform the CBC. It's my job to tell people about what's going on in the media.
And do you find that media consumers care more about how the CBC is run because of, say, the light you've shined?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Canada cares deeply about the CBC regardless. I think that we've always cared about it. I think when people find out that their concern and their support, because we all prop it up, has been betrayed by a lot of the things that were going on there, people felt terrible about that. And, you know, there's a very vocal minority of Canadians who say, sell it, you know, defund it. I think most people want it to be a lot better. They want public broadcasting. They're happy for a rather small amount of money from each citizen to go to them every year, and they just want more value for that money and more accountability and honesty and better news coverage.
Now, the Gian Gomeshi story, I mean, you were instrumental in a lot of that. Was there anything that could have prepared you for just the media firestorm that ignited in this country?
No, I mean, I've never been involved in anything of that scale. I don't think anyone, you know, I remember from a story that I tried and failed for a long time to get anybody to care about, to something where from my office I could hear the helicopter that was, following him in that insane press scrum. I've never seen a mob of reporters like that in my life. I don't think anybody has. It's, an American style. It's baffling to me, and really, there's so many eyes on that as it goes to trial that I just have to kind of set my sights on what I'm being paid to do, and my only involvement, as I see it, is if something incorrect is being introduced to the record, if lies are getting out there, if there's people are twisting in a way that I know to be twisting, or if there's a threat to sources who I have, you know, promised would have my protection, that's when you'll hear from me. Otherwise, I think that there will be plenty of reporters on that.
Now, did the, I guess the Gomeshi story, soon after that you started the Patreon campaign, did you expect the amount of support?
I just need to correct you. That
sure.
Actually happened, the Patreon campaign started before.
Just before, yeah.
And actually, it actually succeeded. We got to a $4,000 a month level. It became my full-time job. So it was already a big success right before the Gomeshi story landed.
I see. And so, I mean, after that you went to $10,000, is that right?
Yeah, in the months following that, it kept going up. So certainly the exposure that brought a whole new listenership to the show. But I think it's important to, there is a false conception out there that Canada Land was built on the attention that story brought about, and it's actually not true.
Yeah, so there's a lot of misconceptions about you. You get a lot of criticism online. I'm sure you see it. And we'll address that in just a sec. Some of your critics say that you have been sloppy, and some have pointed to the Ricochet thing a few weeks back. Some have singled out that stuff about when you were talking about females at the Globe and Mail. I wasn't paying attention this past summer. So after those two stories, after those two situations, did you care to address your critics who say that same mistakes were made?
Well, mistakes get made in journalism all the time, and I do my best to own up to them when they happen. I try to remember if mistakes were made in the Ricochet story. I know that people, the highly partisan, politicized story where people didn't like my take on it, but I'm not sure, unless my memory is failing me and you can help me out, I don't think there was any correction needed or issued in that story. With the Globe and Mail story, I made a reporting error that was embarrassing and that I corrected as soon as I knew about it. I think it's important to note that no Canada Land story has had to be retracted, has proven to be completely false, and I've never, certainly never knowingly misinformed my readers. So, you know, I think that it's okay, and I accept that I am going to be scrutinized to a higher degree than people might scrutinize other reporters when I'm doing news reporting, because it's my job to scrutinize other reporters, so there's a whole glass houses thing. That doesn't make me somehow I can be on guard, I could try to do, you know, the most thorough job as I can, as I hope any reporter would do. It doesn't mean that mistakes aren't going to be made, it just means that I have to be a lot more transparent and upfront about correcting them when they happen. And, you know, I accept that as that's just the cost of entry for doing the kind of work that I'm doing.
And has it surprised you how the media has reacted to you in Canada Land?
Yeah. It's interesting, like, you know, that's a complicated thing to even look at, how they've reacted to me, because, you know, I've gone from everything from nobody cares, nobody's going to care about what you're doing here, nobody cares about what Canadian journalists get up to or what happens behind the scenes or how the sausages get made, to how dare you say that, or we don't like the way you're saying that. I get policed for my tone quite frequently. Simultaneously, I know that some of the, you know, most loyal listeners, the people who are happiest that I'm doing this, are journalists. A lot of the supporters on Patreon are journalists. Rank and file, people have been waiting for somebody to hold organizations to account. A lot of, you know, labor practices and the stuff happening around hosts, also advertorials. There's all sorts of ways in which journalists needed journalism to be applied to their own profession. And I know, you know, I rely on journalists as sources. I get fed information before anybody else when it comes to media stories. So, you know, I list amongst my most ferocious critics, journalists, and my most ferocious supporters, and sometimes they're the same people. So there's a huge spectrum of response, and all of it, you know, the only thing that has surprised me is the extremity of response, the passion of the response, and I'm grateful for it in its negative and positive manifestation.
And as a media consumer, do you think I'm well served by the media that we have in Canada today?
No. I mean, I think that the starting point of this whole project was that I think that we have an underserved market. When it comes to Canadians and information and news, I think that the population has been underserved. And some of that is stuff that is, you know, structural and speaks to the crisis that the news business is undergoing right now. But some of it is cultural. Some of it has to do with problems that have been festering for a long time, combined with that economic situation. Part of it is a climate where, you know, we see all of the destruction that the media sees elsewhere, but none of the renewal, you know, or very little. But it's incredible, just in the couple of years I've been doing this, how, you know, those independent voices are popping up, and there is some hope. And I think that this scrutiny that I've brought and others as well, and just the change in the climate around this has improved some of the situations for, you know, just to know that somebody's paying attention. If you suppress a story, if you run an editorial and don't market, that somebody, you might get caught, is a strong disincentive from doing it. So it's not even, you know, to pat myself on the back that I'm doing such a great job or not. It's just the very existence of Canada Land, I think, is having a positive effect. And you're seeing the rest of the media cover the media in ways they didn't used to. So it's not just Canada Land that's breaking stories about conflicts of interest. You know, the Toronto Star broke that story, Kevin Donovan did the story on Leslie Roberts, and, you know, James Bradshaw at the Globe and Mail did that fantastic story about what happened at CTV with Bell Media and Kevin Kroll and CRTC being banned from the airwaves. So, it's, you know, like, that is now something you can talk about that you weren't able to talk about before. And I'm seeing the press find their voice. One of the chief complaints on Canada Land has been the way that the press has been meek around the Harper government, as the press's access to government has been choked. And we're starting to see the press speak up about that, finally. So there's positive progress.
Now, you mentioned that there are the three of you full-time at Canada Land, three part-time. Would you tell us about some of the people around you now and what they'll provide to the site? You introduced an editor on the most recent podcast this past weekend. What's her role, and what's your role going forward?
Yeah, so Jane Litvinenko is a fantastically smart and clever young woman who just started with us as a full-time editor. She is reporting stories, writing her own stories. She's commissioning stories from freelancers and working with them. I'll continue to write news stories for the site, but I think that what the audience wants from me is to be the best podcast host, the best interviewer I could be. And so I'm focusing on that, and also just as the thing gets, you know, a little bit larger and there's a bit more organizational work, I'm trying to be a bit more involved in that. Because news is really hard. You know, if a story breaks, everything else just screeches to a halt. And, you know, it's difficult to keep on a broadcast schedule or to run a business when you're sort of at the mercy of those forces. So that's what Jane, you know, is here to do. And I think it's really important to get really wonderful people and let them do their thing. So I'm not going to be, you know, the editor-in-chief, you know, who has some sort of organizational hierarchy over her. It's her website to edit. So she's doing that. And then Katie Jensen is a wonderful young audio producer who has who's editing and producing both the Canadaland podcast and helping out with the Commons political show and doing really umpteen other jobs that need to get done. And then we got three part-timers, two hosts and a producer making Commons our political show. And then a lot of people contribute freelance content.
How has the Commons show been doing?
It's been doing great in terms of numbers. And, you know, the idea from the start has been that this show should really try to build its own audience. There are a lot of Canadaland listeners who listen to it. But the, you know, the conceit of Canadaland has been to have an insider's conversation of what happened behind the scenes in the media. It's almost the opposite conceit for Commons. Commons is about, I don't follow politics, but I want to know more about it, and I want somebody to give me the non-insider's take, because so much of political journalism in Canada has been insiders sort of yammering at each other about the horse race or about party dynamics. And I wanted us to provide a show that tells you why you should care about politics and really to start back to basics and tell me about some of the basic concepts that just get thrown around in the jargon to get decoded. So it's succeeded in, you know, I think they're doing 13,000 downloads an episode. It took me over a year to get there with Canadaland. They've only been at it for a few months. Mm-hmm. So they're doing quite well there. I'm already getting a sense of who their audience is, and there are a lot of young Canadians, and there are a lot of diverse Canadians who listen to that show who I don't think have ever felt represented by political media. So I think they're doing great, and I think that they're going to do better. If you listen to the first few months of Canadaland, they were not my best episodes, and the show just got better from there. So, you know, the best episodes of Commons, I think, are better than the best episodes of Canadaland back in the day of our first few months. So I'm very hopeful that the show will continue to go in the direction of setting and, you know, be a real resource.
In terms of the interviews that you've done on for the Canadaland show, what's been popular and what surprised you in terms of what's been popular?
The most surprising one, you know, I mean, obviously the two episodes I did on the Gomeshi story, you know, were, that was the story that everybody wanted, yeah, every bit of information they could find. So that, you know, those episodes just like spiked, you know. We kept a lot of those listeners and not all of them. So it's interesting to see outside of that what's been popular. It's not what you'd necessarily think. We had Jay Baruchel on, a Hollywood celebrity. Very strong numbers for that show, but nothing groundbreaking. Uh-huh. We did a show on the Irving Media Empire in Atlantic Canada. That is second to the Gomeshi episodes as the most popular episode. You know, that's like number three. There's two Gomeshi episodes, and then there's the one about the Irving family in New Brunswick, and that is the third most listened to episode ever. So you never know what issue or what guest is going to be, you know, to popular episodes have been the Scott Thompson interview, Chantal Hebert. It's personality-based, and it's also issue-based, and it's incredible to me when people feel that something important to them is reflected for the first time in the media. They are really feverish about it. They listen to it. They tell a friend.
Yeah, the Scott Thompson thing was quite enjoyable. I like the Hart Pomerantz one a great deal. And
thank you.
Yeah, I'm curious to know in terms of, because you've gotten to talk to a lot of people, you know, not just journalism, but comedy, because of that interests you. What have you learned about Canadian culture that you didn't know before starting Canadaland?
That's an interesting question.
Because we do get the inside view, you know, of how comedy works, how show business works, how to get a show on the TV and how to do comedy on the radio. So, you know, I mean, I get the sense that that's what you wanted to do, and so you're looking at it critically now.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've learned a little bit, you know, about just the mechanics of that and the frustrations people, you know, find. And I think I have a bit more of an in-depth awareness of just what it takes to make media in Canada and why it's so hard, despite so many talented people who want so desperately to make wonderful stuff. I think I could, you know, if we had more time, like, explain some of the barriers to just getting those shows made and made well, or those projects made and made well. And, you know, really a lot of what Canadaland has done is sort of been like an in-depth analysis and dissection of broken systems of cultural production. You know, in a bit of a different sense, I've gotten to know a lot of creative Canadian, you know, people, comedians, but also, you know, tons of different fields. And I've really gotten a sense of commonality about, you know, in the souls of Canadian citizens who just feel like, similarly to me, this mixture of, it's a strange kind of patriotism because we're not your typical patriots, and there's like, there is that thing that we're all very familiar with, that second class citizen, should I have moved to the States, and, you know, is this sort of the minor leagues for what I'm up to, and that's, you know, that kind of self-pitying nonsense. But more often than not, it's people who have the option and chose to stay here and care desperately about making it better here and are mad about the people and the structures that stop it from being better. So there's a lot of heart in that, you know. There's a lot of hope in that, too. I think that, you know, there's a bit of a silent force there, that people, you know, to discover each other and know that other people care, too. Like, you don't want to necessarily go and move and make a lot of money and live in a place that you don't have the same connection to. And, you know, the desire to actually improve things, you know, here, where you're from, where you live, where your family is, a country that has a lot going for it, is shared. It's shared across different media. It's shared across the country. So, you know, I'm hoping to kind of connect some of those strands and people, you know, can kind of figure out a language and a method of moving forward, you know?
Well, in terms of because you've blazed a trail with media criticism in Canada. I mean, Canada Land has been a great success the last couple of years that you know, I don't think the media can go back to before after all this. Through it all, was there someone that you looked to, that you looked up to, say, that was an influence on you and remains so today?
I mean, yeah, I've got tons of influences. They're kind of disparate. I mean, you know, I was motivated early on reading, like, Daniel Klaus comic books was just when I was initially just wanted to be kind of a bit of a punk and satirist. There are, you know, journalists, you know, be it people who've sort of mentored me directly, like Michael Enright, who I have tremendous respect for as a broadcaster and as a journalist, to people who've just, I think, dared to, you know, I think I have a new respect for reporters and what it takes to kind of stand alone and say something that is unpopular, be it looking at I.F. Stone, you know, people like that who've taken big risks just to do the work of journalism. You know, and then there's like the form of it, and when you know, heights that I aspire to and will never hit, when it just comes to people who just have such a clarity of voice, if you're talking about just, you know, a Joan Didion essay, there's almost like strands that I've just sort of given up. Like, I, you know, that's not the mode that I'm going to function in, you know. I'm going to have an impact in a different way. So, you know, the mission is to have honest conversations. And, you know, there are people like everyone. I think what Ira Glass has done is amazing in, you know, modernizing radio and what he's done with narrative. I think Howard Stern has a lot to recommend him as well.
Now, how have you been doing in terms of reflecting the rest of the country? Because it is called Canada Land, and looking at, say, beyond Toronto. I mean, is that something that you should work towards? Better, maybe?
Yeah. Yep. Done my best with limited resources. Got out to Fredericton for a live taping. You know, Hamilton, I know it's still in Ontario. But, you know, did some interviews in Winnipeg and Vancouver, but I definitely, in the year ahead, we're getting, you know, we're better. The idea in the year ahead is to do live tapings, to do at least a few of them in different parts of the country that we haven't been to before.
Jesse, thanks for this and all the best.
It's a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much for your interest.
At Jesse Brown is the Twitter handle. CanadaLandShow.com is the website. Jesse Brown joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.